You're listening to the Raising Empowered Humans series here on the Chat About Children podcast. Let's chat.
Discover children at a whole new level. Be empowered to grow with the children in your life. Welcome to Chat About Children with Sonia Vestelich.
Thank you for joining me for this very special series, the Raising Empowered Humans series. The intention of this series is to share powerful conversations with heart-led leaders, entrepreneurs, experts, innovators, and imaginators who share their stories, philosophies, practices, and principles when it comes to raising empowered humans. This series aims to inspire and energize parents, carers, and professionals who work with children to leave a legacy of raising children who are of highest service to themselves and to the world. Now, I do welcome you to sign up to my newsletter at soniabestelich.com for transformative tips, tools, and strategies to help you be more empowered in raising empowered humans. Let's get this episode started. Today, I'm so excited and honored to have Stephanie Rodriguez joining the podcast today. Stephanie is absolutely incredible. It's almost hard to actually summarize Stephanie within this interview, but I know that her impact and her story and everything about Stephanie is absolutely humbling and inspirational. Stephanie Rodriguez is on a mission to positively impact a billion lives by 2025 and democratize safety in support of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. She's also proudly part of the 100 Women of Davos and the recipient of the Women in Tech Global Award 2022 for being the most inspirational leader. She's an author, she's an internationally acclaimed motivational and TEDx speaker, she's a human rights activist and a resilience expert. In March 22, she gave her first TEDx Women's Talk. Now, Stephanie's story is remarkable and very much extraordinary. In 2019, she contracted cerebral malaria in Nigeria, surviving a near-death coma, sepsis, and a three-year medical recovery journey. Now, she's embarked on a new passion, which is fencing. And as a bilateral above-ankle osseointegrated amputee, she has begun wheelchair fencing and training to be the first female para-fencer representing Australia in the Paralympic Games in Paris 2024. Stephanie Rodriguez, welcome to the Chat About Children podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Being a mom is one of my greatest attributes when I list things on my resume as hashtags. It's mom first.
Before I kind of launch into the depth, tell us, share a little bit about that.
Well, I have 2.5 children. My first one biologically is a very handsome 17-year-old who just finished his HSCs and has already been accepted to uni. So I'm super proud of him. I am a biological egg donor to equally an 18-year-old lovely young man who's just finished his HSCs and is a remarkable human being. And I have a four-legged whippet that I rescued from the RSPCA. So I have 2.5 children of different shades and different positions.
Oh gosh, I love that, Steph. I love it. And you know, just in the intro, in the bio that I shared, there's so much that I know that people listening to that would have so many questions running around in their minds. So I would be grateful for you starting with sharing your reflections on what key characteristics make you an empowered human and perhaps how your childhood has contributed to that.
You either grow up one of two ways, and I'm no child psychologist, but having seen lots of child psychologists and adult mental health professionals in my journey of recovery, you either mirror your parents or you are become the opposite. And I think it's really either or. And those parents who want to exemplify all the great qualities we want to see in humans, if we're raised that way, then we mirror our parents in all of their positive attributes. If that's not the case, then we perhaps learn from their mistakes and become different human beings. So I think I am the latter more than the former, knowing that I was the first born female of three children. I'm a middle child, having to take on a lot of very early responsibilities due to the nature of my parents' work schedule. My mom was a nurse and she worked in a nursing home on the graveyard shift. So a lot of the house duties fell upon me. A lot of parenting my younger sister fell upon me. And even in her senior years, being almost a dependent senior parent kind of puts me in that parent role. So me being Cancerian as well, I tend to be the nurturer and the carer for everybody else. But how that would have contributed to, you know, the person I am today, I think in wanting to look at my examples in parenting and then decide what type of parent I wanted to be to my son, and very consciously make those decisions. Very much choose a little funny anecdote, Sonia.
Yeah.
When I was in about year six, year five, I don't know how old kids are at that age. I forget. I'm too old. And we'd been out on a boat all day. My little cousin, who's my age, came to spend the night with us. And I wake up in the middle of the night and she is vomiting on my chest, like full on vomiting on my chest. And I woke up to the smell, the feeling of warm stick. It was awful. Cringeworthy, awful. And I'll tell you why this makes sense. But after this, I hated vomiting. I couldn't be around anyone who was vomiting. And it became a real marker in my psyche of this experience that I had. Fast forward to my son being born. He was born in February. He was asleep, got the baby monitor on. He would, you know, be about 6-7 months old. Hear this. And I'm like, I run in and pick him up. And I just remember him being covered in spew and having to check myself, because I knew if I knee-jerked my reaction to that moment, even though he would never be old enough to consciously remember this, that I would be passing down my baggage to my baby. And I didn't want him to grow up with the same issue I had. And I just remember that very conscious parenting moment, crystal clear. Because he proceeded to throw up 4 times that night. So getting up and having to completely change the cot, the baby, the everything. And when he got done throwing up, he'd start giggling. Like he was fine until the next time. So it was a long night. But, you know, now he has absolutely no problem with vomiting and neither do I. But it took me from my childhood to getting to being an older mom in my late 30s to understanding that really in a very anecdotal explanation, but certainly looking at what we learn when we're children or what implants on us becomes these conscious choices as a parent we have to make.
That's right. And it's super powerful. And that example, I quite like, you're kind of giving us the almost that internal experience for you, where it was like, this is a conscious moment and I'm connecting to it consciously. So, you know, in the context of raising empowered humans, there's a lot we can learn from you, Steph. And I guess I'd love to ask, what do you think is the one most important thing that you feel we need to keep at the core of our focus?
I would say, and I've done a lot of speaking to parents around schools, around domestic violence, around appropriateness. I'm in the safety industry in my day job. Resilience is in my personal life and very much a part of my personal story. But I would have to say empathy outranks everything. Empathy / integrity. And those two things, because a working example of this is my son. And I, you know, he's my teacher in many instances, and he blesses me, and he has a very old soul wisdom. And I it was one night we were in Sydney, I think it was just after the pandemic where lockdowns were down, and he was on his phone, and I said, "What are you doing?" I was cooking dinner. And I noticed he was in Uber Eats, and I'm like, "I'm cooking dinner. What are you doing?" And he didn't want to tell me. And I was like, "Come on, what are you doing? Hands on hips, chancleta face, you know?" And he said, "Well, Mom," he said, "you know, I've got this friend, and his mom hasn't been doing very well. And I've ordered him Uber Eats on my account, and I'm sending it to him. And I don't want you to be mad at me because I'm doing it for my account." And I said, "Mad at you? I think that's one of the most noble things you've ever done. And further, call that child and tell him if he's ever hungry, there's a seat at our table every single night of the week, and he is always welcome here," because that's the way we were raised. But, you know, in him and him being that person. But, you know, to take a step back to, you know, you touched on my illness and, you know, getting cerebral malaria. And, you know, Sonia, when I woke up from the coma, I didn't even know I was sick. I'd been on a 4-day business trip after a 2-week business trip. And here I am in a foreign hospital, paralyzed, can't speak, can't do anything. And my son is there in Boston. And last I left him, he was in Canberra. So what is he doing there? What had he been through in that coma period? And for me to learn later that I had been 3 times 5 minutes from death. Literally, they had a family meeting, called him back to the hospital and said, he's going to die in 5 minutes. Say your goodbyes, call the priest, do what you do, but it's over. So him being 13 years old at the time and having to, you know, live through those kinds, and I'm a single mom. So you add that I'm a full charge single mother, the fear that must have been going through his mind about, well, who's going to look after me? Am I going to go to uncle this one, uncle that one? You know, will I get adopted? You know, like he was probably, well, I know it was more fearful for him. And he also feared losing me. So when they finally extubate me about day 3 or 4 coming out of this coma, and he comes to see me and I'm out of ICU, because when I was ICU, they wouldn't let everybody in all the time. And he and I are just hanging out. You know, I broke down and I started crying because I was there. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't take myself to the bathroom. I couldn't scratch my own nose. And I'm looking at my baby and I said to him, I am so sorry. I don't know how I'm going to take care of you at this moment. I don't have a plan. And I know it wasn't my fault that this happened, but I was apologizing to him. And he looked at me with the wisdom of hundreds of years behind his eyes. And he said, you know, Mom, life is 10% what you're given and 90% what you do with it. So there was no room for me to feel sorry for myself in that instance, because it was my, how I would take this blow, getting all the way knocked down to paralysis, hospitalization, which I didn't know then it would be a 3-4 year. And I'm still in recovery. I'm still having surgeries. I'm still, you know, I will never be better, but I'm alive. So I'm thankful. But yeah. In him saying this to me, it's an unforgettable moment in my memory of him imparting wisdom that I had taught him through his years that he would then become my teacher when I needed it. You know, so when I talk about empathy and integrity, two things, like when Facebook first came out and social media for kids, I got asked about it because I owned a digital marketing agency and would create social campaigns for big brands. And I said, the two most important things you teach your children about the advent of smartphones and social media is to remember that they're human and consider their privacy. You know, and that's ethics, that's ethics, that's integrity. And what would you want done if that were you? You know?
Yes.
And so and not saying don't do this, this is okay, but that's not okay. If you teach children, in my belief, the fundamental rules of being a decent, empowered human being, yes, then every situation that they get to apply those rules to, they will. And sometimes they may, you know, make a judgment error. And I'm not saying children are perfect, but when they've got a framework and they've had a good example. Yes. So we don't just speak about integrity and empathy. We live it, we practice it. So it's just a part of the culture of our family that we behave in this way. And you know, that makes me, when I saw this with my son, when he was worried about getting in trouble for buying his friend dinner, I was like, dude, I'm so proud of you. I just want to give you a high five. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. And Steph, I've done well holding back tears, can I just say? Because whenever I read your story and go into that and what you were just describing, I'm like, I can do this. Breathe, breathe. Because there is so much to be moved by that story and even your son and the wisdom and it coming back to you. If I can say that in raising empowered humans, we are investing in them, but we're investing in ourselves and beyond, because we're not islands. Yes, we're family units, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
But then it's the ripples that come from the way that we are, as you say, that we are in our being as a family. What are our actions? What are our thoughts? How are we aligning all of that to come to that core of empathy and integrity? I absolutely love the way that you shared all of that. So thank you, Steph. you know, we've talked about resilience, and when I was, you know, preparing to chat with you today, what came to me as almost the title for this episode was the mind, heart, and soul resilience, because that's really how I encapsulated you, you know? And so I'd love to understand how you define resilience to start with. Then second to that, you know, as parents, carers, but also professionals who work with children, because I don't want to just focus on parents, carers, because professionals who work with children are a major part, of children's lives. What's your definition of resilience, and how can we better allow that muscle of resilience to develop in children?
I define resilience as the ability to come through difficult situations with grace and elegance, And it doesn't mean it won't get ugly, but it means that you come through with grace. And it's really a mindset. In my company, we have a corporate value, and I think I apply those because my work and life are so intermixed. But the first core value of my company is find the yes. And that's a very simple concept, but it empowers people to not focus on problems and become solution-minded. So in becoming a bilateral amputee and losing my legs, one of the few things before I graduated from physiotherapy to get to leave hospital with my new legs was learning how to fall. That was the most abstract physio session I ever had. And my physio said, you will at one point fall on those new legs of yours. You need to know how to get up. You need to be able to tell people not to help you, because people will want to, but they might move you in a way that could cause more injury to you. So you have to say, no, let me do this, because only you can feel your own body. And I think with children, when we see that they're struggling with something, or they are in a difficult situation, both might be socially, it might be with schoolwork, it might be with the something physical they're trying to do. You know, what are, okay, yes, you've got this problem. We acknowledge that. Yes, you're frustrated. We acknowledge that. What are the solutions? Find the yes. Well, we could do it this way. We could do it that, go under, go around, you know, go beside. Yeah. Like whatever it is in that problem solving, but teaching problem solving as a means of resilience training. And it's not that the answers may not be obvious, and they may not be the first thing we see, but there's always a way. And in becoming disabled later in life, I've had to learn to manage and navigate a lot of uncertainty, but I can either do that with a positive mindset, like, okay, I can figure this out. I'm going to find the yes here. Oh, I can't do this. Well, we're going to work it. We keep at it until we find the yes. And, you know, in my business, how this would show up would be, and if an employee got stuck with a problem, a customer service issue, a software issue, they would evaluate before ever walking into my door. Okay, Steph, this is the problem. These are three possible things. This one might cost more. This might take longer. This one may not work absolutely, but hey, what do we got to lose? So it makes the conversation a lot more focused on, yes. You know, one problem turns into 90 problems. It's like, great, what is the problem? And then how, you know, finding the yes. So that's always been a, you know, a catchphrase in my house, just as well as in my company. And I think if we train our tiny humans to problem solve as part of discovering problems, oh my God, the house so far. Oh my God, I stubbed my toe. What are we going to do about it? We're going to get ice. We're going to put it under cold water. You know, what are we going to do? And when they can start to make these choices on their own, they do. And that means that they also feel more in control. And I find that control and lack of control are often, I know as an adult who's newly disabled, the lack of control puts everyone in a more vulnerable position. And that understanding that sense of control and vulnerability, when someone can make those choices, they feel more in control. And then they also feel more in control of the outcomes versus just being told absolute. Okay, what are we going to do about it? And when you put that question back to children and you've taught them how to deductive reason and to be solution focused versus problem focused, I think that creates an empowered young person.
100%. And thank you for sharing that. I see it all the time, you know, many, many, many times over the years, but it continues to be one of the most powerful ways and effective ways to keep nurturing the practice of empowering humans. It's almost just, it's a practice. And in today's society that can be quite rushed sometimes, it is easier to solve the problems for them. Is it easier to make choices for them? But that is an act of disempowerment. It's not to, and I'm not saying that to cause guilt. It's just more about awareness. So if you're listening, like, oh my God, I do that. That's cool. Just go, I've noticed it now. What can I do differently? Where, how do I find the yes, as Steph says? And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
One other quick thing that I know you kind of, it was super powerful. You didn't gloss over it, but it was just embedded in all the other wisdom, Steph. When you said only you can feel your own body, there's actually so much to that. And this is something that I'm very passionate about in raising empowered humans, is having us facilitate as much as we can with our young people, for them to tune into themselves, for them to build that relationship with themselves. And that's really, really powerful. And if they start to practice that as well, tuning into their body and what works and what doesn't, it could be something really simple, like if it's mealtime and they don't feel like something, let it be. Listen to your body and respond to some of the cues. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And you know, for children who get anxious, you know, my son, I could tell stories about my kid forever, but, you know, my son went through a phase that he didn't want to go to bed because there was so much to do and he was so full of energy. And, you know, we would talk and tell stories, but it would get to a time like, okay, it's bedtime. You got to go to school. It's going to be hell in the morning if you don't rest. And I used to put on this sleep meditation app, and he just knew he could not win, but he hated it. And guarantee you, within 4 minutes of this, like when he was really little, I used to put on Norah Jones, the Norah Jones album, and pretty much everyone who's had a nursery with a hearing child would know that that was a really good soother for children. But my son came home from school, like in high school, and he said, "Mom, who is that bloody woman you used to play in my nursery when I was little?" And I said, "Why?" And he said, "I went to the nurse's office today for something and sat there, and I was sitting there waiting and I fell asleep. And it was that woman." So the memory, it carried on from his like nursery days to Norah Jones, that when he heard, you know, "Don't know why I didn't come home," he nodded off to sleep. That was his reaction to it.
But in
helping with the mindfulness and meditation and playing an app that would help him to wind down. So, you know, and that talks him through quieting his mind and quieting his body. And, you know, that talking down, and she did it way better than I could. So, you know, but he just knew if the app went on, he wasn't winning, like it was game over. So he would always be like, "No, not the sleep app, not again," but it worked. And
it worked.
Now he knows if he needs to clear his mind, that he can lie and close his eyes and calm his body. And those little things have transcended into just go to bed, do it, lights up, because I said so. You know, I wanted to help him find solutions, but also to make that experience time not something like force feeding a child. You know, how many eating disorders do we have now from people who, "You better eat everything on your plate," because that's what my parents said to me. "But I'm full, Mom, because I had a snack after school. I snuck a Twinkie." You know,
like, yeah, exactly.
You know, you must eat everything on your plate. You know, it's sometimes those things don't create the outcome that we want with absolutes. And, you know, my son, fortunately, is not, he was never an overeater. He doesn't have a bad diet. He needs to see green things on his plate every time he eats, because it's the thing that we do. And, you know, in being able to say, listen to your body will tell you if you're feeling anxious, if you're feeling tired, if you're feeling unwell, that you learn to be able to communicate those feelings and to articulate how does your body feel right now.
Wondering how your family can flourish without the sacrifice of your health, wealth, and dreams? Empowering a family to flourish is both an art and a science. And I'm super excited to have packaged decades of expertise to create the Flourishing Families Program. It's time to shift the energy of your family ecosystem with more fun, more freedom, and more fulfillment. Head over to soniabeslich.com and sign up now. Now, Steph, I'd love to ask, just in these last couple of questions that we have, you know, we've talked about you know, finding the yes. And I wonder, are there any other mindset mantras that you find yourself kind of coming back to within yourself when you're in those moments of challenge?
Absolutely. The most recent thing I'm doing, you mentioned it, Sonia, but I am training, I'm leading the Australian female para fencing team, which has been inactive since 1960. It's a lead up and run up to empowering young people with mobility challenges to para fence. We have the 2032 Paralympics in Australia. Australia needs a squad. If anyone's interested, please reach out and DM me and I will connect you to the club. If you have a child who might be mobility impaired or with some congenitive issues, mobility-wise, that might find joy in a sport that they otherwise can't play soccer. You know, it is a new sport, but it's a wonderful sport. It requires discipline in becoming an athlete later in life. And I've been a very busy businesswoman, but athlete was never a descriptor. Active dancer, you know, doing Pilates, but athlete, the mental fortitude to become an athlete was never something my parents encouraged in me. It wasn't something I did as an adult. So to now be, you know, training as hard as I am and having to work with different people, I've trained in Greece, I've trained in Poland, I've competed in Italy and in Korea. I've got four more world championships to qualify for Paris. But in that being an irrational goal, almost irrational, like a delusional goal. J. Cole, the rapper, he has a whole podcast about this, which I love. And he talks about delusional dreaming and goals. And my goal to become Australia's first female para fencer to compete since 1960 in the Paralympics, that's my dream. And I am doing everything in my power to train as hard as I can. Small people can't understand your big dreams. This is a huge push. And I could or I could not make it based on a number of key factors, but mainly the competitions I get to attend and my scoring of points. So I need to attend four competitions. So I can't get sick. I can't miss. I can't have something else to do. And I need to improve, which is train, 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 train. But if I do all of these things, there's the possibility. And I think if we can encourage when our children demonstrate that they have a passion about something, we as adults can look back with a lens on our parents and their parents and see that people used to do a lot of stuff that made them very miserable. They did things that they were dispassionate about because that's what society told them they had to do. The right jobs were this. The wrong jobs were that. Girls didn't go into STEM careers. Mm. They didn't go into engineering. You know, that was for boys and all the gender bias around professional careers and the arts. That resilient spirit of not being afraid to dream that irrational dream and to dream big and not allow someone to steal that from you because they don't dream as big as you do. And I see that, you know, with our children, just we might not have been able to dream what's possible for them, but it's not a reason for us to talk them out of it just because we didn't dream it or we couldn't do it based on when we were born and what we were exposed to, allowed to do, empowered to do, et cetera.
Beautiful. You know, that really ties into purpose in following that, I guess, the philosophy, if you like, and actioning that within our families where we're creating space for our children to exercise their creativity, for them to feel into what they're passionate about and to support that unconditionally, you know, and that's really the key essence, isn't it? So Steph, is there one key takeaway message for raising empowered humans? We've shared so much gold already, but is there one that you'd like to leave us with as a takeaway?
The biggest blessings I have with the relationship that I have with my son is trust and truth. And I think those are very much intertwined. If you are not truthful, you don't imbue trust. But being able to create that space for trust and truth means that a lot of the confusion that comes with different stages of upbringing, from toddlers to awareness and self-awareness at that young age, and then maturing into, you know, puberty and appropriate relationships and all these other things that we morph from babies into teenagers into adults, you know, our goal is to raise decent, upstanding humans. And truth and trust are the two pivotal cornerstones of raising a well-balanced, empathetic, you know, decent human being. I tell, you know, people all the time, parents, raise boys you'd like your daughters to date. It's very simple. Raise boys you don't, you wish you, you know, and raise young ladies you wish your sons would bring home.
Yeah.
And so if we looked at this and went, is this what I would want for my kid? You know, then are we doing our best to not create the jerk that cuts you off in the car park or steals your trolley in the supermarket or doesn't hold the elevator? It's all the little things. And children live what they learn. Children live what exactly what they're seeing at home is exactly what they will become. School has only but so much responsibility of teaching. And then the rest really falls on us to be good examples in our own, but, you know, reinforce those examples and that desired behavior over and over and over again.
Steph, how can, you know, listeners and viewers, how can we help you and contribute to your mission?
Well, I do. If you go to my Digital Goddess Instagram page, you will find more about my fencing story. The New South Wales para fencing team need help because we're a new team and we want to empower more young people to get involved with that. It's a nonprofit that's on the New South Wales wheelchair fencing account. But what I'm also doing, Sonia, and I'm really excited about this because this impacts kids in a bigger way. I am the global ambassador for Rotary International's Finish the Fight, finish-the-fight.org campaign. And our mission is to raise $15 million to eradicate malaria in the West Pacific Rim, specifically Vanuatu, Papua New Guinea, et cetera, because there a child under the age of 5 dies of malaria every minute. But the money we're raising does 3 things. $10 buys a net, but one net reduces malaria by 50%. And who knows, that kid could become the next rocket scientist. He could, you know, become anything, his potential. But to think of the socioeconomic and emotional cost on those communities losing children left, right, and center, because malaria is a very aggressive killer. It kills cerebral malaria, the one I contracted in Nigeria, has a 97.7% fatality rate, and it's fast. You get it, and 2 weeks later, you're in a coma. And if no one knows what's wrong with you because you didn't get the right test, you die. So it is no respecter of persons. You know, think of least of all me to come and contract this, but how people can make a real difference. You know, if children are your soft spot, save some lives. Go to finishthefight.org, which is run by the Rotary and the UN Global Fund, and buy a net, save some children in the Western Pacific Rim. And help me do that, because I'm really passionate about my opportunity as a survivor, one of the very, 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 very few to use my voice for those mothers. I feel for those mothers losing their babies, you know? I'm so blessed with my son. It's a powerful mission for me.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you, Steph. So finishthefight.org. Thank you for committing every single day and everything that you do to really embodying your mission. As I said at the start, it's an absolute honor to have had you on the podcast to share everything that you are doing and everything that you're contributing. I'll pop in the show notes how to connect with Steph, how to donate, and together, we do awesome stuff. So
wonderful.
Thank you for being part of the series to raise empowered humans, Stephanie.
Thank you so much, Sonia.
Thanks for joining the Chat About Children with Sonia Vestelich. www.chataboutchildren.com.